Honorable Member, the Office of the Auditor General, representative of the small bus operators, and representative of the Golden Arrow. You are all welcome in the meeting, in this meeting. Our meeting for today is has got two items on the agenda. We'll give most of our time to the first item, which is the briefing by the Office of the Auditor General. It's a very, very long process, and we ask a lot of questions as a member of the Portfolio Committee. But because I had already committed to a request by the small bus operators that we will also accommodate them, I will give them 20 minutes after we are done with item one so they can introduce their subject. We will not deliberate much on it. We will then, at a later stage, make a follow-up meeting in which we will then discuss issues that the small bus operators will be raising. I did not get information from the Golden Arrows as to whether they would also want to make a presentation. I've not had anything with them. The last time I interacted with them was when I was invited in a launch of the new buses. But if there is any issue that you would also want to raise, you will be given that opportunity to raise that issue. But we will not have in-depth discussion on those issues because we have dedicated this day to the Auditor General because we are starting with the process of budget review. Honorable Ol.
Chairperson, thank you. My colleague, Honorable Kramblock and myself have got two extremely urgent things that we just need to ask the committee that have come to our attention. Could I do so now? Okay, the first one is, in my pigeonhole this morning, I got this document, which is amendments to the road, the National Road Traffic Regulation. And my question is just this. It's signed on the 26th of April, and it's on the top, it appears to have been faxed on the 31st of May. I'm sorry, the microphone may be broken. It appears to be faxed to Parliament on the 31st of May 2012. Now, these regulations were gazetted, I believe, on the 8th of July. I may have that date wrong, but they were gazetted in Government Gazette without the committee having received it. Now, I found it in my pigeonhole this morning. I think I wrote you a letter about this some time back. And the point is that according to the Act, we are supposed to get this before it's gazetted so that we can submit comments. And I found it today in my pigeonhole, which means it's been gazetted without comments from this committee. And I'm not sure now what the process is. Does this mean that it's going to be withdrawn and we have to submit our comments and then it's going to be gazetted again at a later stage? Does this mean that somebody forgot to give it to us? Did the Speaker's office sit on it for all these months? This is related to transport regulations, some of which affect the highways and the freeways and so on, but the document's only tabled now, and it was apparently, according to the facts at the top of the thing, sent on the 31st of May. We only got it this morning in original. Well, I got it. I don't know. I assume everyone else got it. So I don't know what we're going to do now. Do we, you know, we haven't, the law requires us as members to submit comments. That's what it says. The copy must come to Parliament for comments, and we must submit comments. We haven't had the chance to do that, and it's already been gazetted, so now what? And then my colleague has a second issue.
Thanks, Chairman. Also, to alert the committee to a potentially very serious problem, and my request is that we set aside possibly 10 minutes of this committee meeting to discuss the way forward. I'm sure we can find time after these reports to do that. The nature of the problem is the airspace in Gauteng province. I've had increasing correspondence from stakeholders at the very highest level in Gauteng and aviation experts who have expressed growing concern about the proliferation of airstrips that have an impact on the approaches and takeoffs from the airports in Gauteng. And that obviously increases the risk that these airports or the landing strips proliferate of a near miss or possibly a more tragic situation. I have tried to have a meeting with the Minister or the Deputy Minister for some time now. I've written to them twice. I've spoken to the Chief of his office. We have got no response, and I just think it's going to reflect very poorly on us as a Transport Committee if these concerns are brought to our attention, and it appears, to, at least to the outside stakeholders, that we're dragging our feet. All we require is a meeting with the Ministry, either the Minister or Deputy, preferably both, so these fears can be allayed and urgent action can be taken, rather than saying we'll have a commission inquiry to find out what went wrong after something goes wrong. And I'm very, very concerned that our letters don't seem to have any effect for a reasonable request simply to get things together. So I'm appealing to you, Madam Chairperson, as the Chairperson of the Transport Committee, to open this matter up for discussion during the course of this meeting so that we can urgently meet with the stakeholders and Ministry and find a solution very fast. We can't have a possible near collision or worse that blights our committee and our record simply because we didn't act when these matters were brought to our attention. Thanks for the indulgence in letting us speak before your formal meeting proceeds.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. May I take this opportunity by requesting that the meeting based on the two issues that were raised, not to respond now, rather take the latter request and lump them together to say let's allow this meeting to proceed on the items. Then in the last 10 minutes, we allow for that discussion in relation to the regulations, one, and the second one on the airspace in Gauteng, because on the first one relates to the processes, the internal matters of RCA, how do we relate as Parliament, and so it might not necessarily need the entire meeting so that we don't hold it back, but rather suggest Chairperson completely, yes, we accept the two points, but we discuss them towards the end of the meeting. We allow space so that we remain as a committee and deal with these matters effectively. Thank you, Chair.
Is there anyone with a contrary view? There is no hand. So we are all in agreement that we will include in on the agenda these two items right at the end. Thank you very much. We will then give the opportunity to the Office of the Auditor General to give us a briefing on the outcome of 2011-2012 financial year. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bhutim Sidi, business executive from the Auditor General. I'm accompanied by my colleague Vinay Rambali. He is responsible for the audit of the Department of Transport. The purpose of the brief is to cover the performance of the Department of Transport as far as the 2011-12 financial period is concerned. The presentation will cover the audit opinion's history for the last 4 years. We will report on the key focus areas that we looked at in the office. Then we'll also cover other matters of interest. And lastly, conclude on other AG reports where if there's any performance audit that has taken place, investigation, etc., relating to the department. As indicated earlier, this will cover the performance in terms of 2011-12 financial year. We are also indicating that the department has last attended the SCOPA hearing on the 17th August 2011. Moving on to section two, this is the opinion history of the department from year 08-09 up to 11-12. The department has been consistent in receiving unqualified opinions with findings on predetermined objectives and or compliance matters. So that is depicted by the yellow color. And below, we are explaining the type of audit opinions. Where green is a clean audit opinion, where there are no significant findings on PDOs or compliance matters. But the department over the last 4 years has been sitting on yellow, with unqualified with findings on PDOs and or compliance. Those details will be covered in the later section. In terms of the key focus areas that I've mentioned, we look at supply chain management as a key focus area as an office, and we've rated it as red. I'll basically explain the coloring later on. We also look at predetermined objective reporting as a key focus area. We look at HR management activities. We look at IT controls and the general control environment surrounding the information technology used by the department. We look at material misstatements or omissions with regards to annual financial statements submitted for audit. Then lastly, we look at the financial health of the department, which is the new area, where we look at how the department is managing its financial resources. Is it in a position to discharge its obligations as they fall due? Issues around, are the creditors paid on time within 30 days, as prescribed by PFMA. We look at collection of debtors where applicable. So if one looks at the ratings, we use three colors. Red, meaning there's the interventions or other focus that needs to be lifted in that specific area. Yellow means the progress and action plans in addressing identified weaknesses and weaknesses in control. Then green means we are happy with the control environment and the processes around that area. If one looks at supply chain management, we've alerted it as red because of the findings that I'll cover later, where we say management and other oversight structures should look at the supply chain management issues in making sure that the department adheres to legislation prescript as far as procurement is concerned. In terms of predetermined objectives, that is green. There were no significant issues in the current financial period that we are reporting on. The department has managed to resolve the issues that we have raised in the previous audit with regards to predetermined objectives. On HR management, we are saying there's a bit of some regression. That's why we have alerted it as red. Then we'll cover the details in the following sections. On IT controls, we say it's yellow. There's action plans that are in place by management to deal with the issues. Then we'll also highlight what are the control weaknesses around the IT governance and the general control. On material omissions, we alerted it as red, despite the fact that we picked up one issue where the department had to make adjustment in the financial statements. But overall, the quality of the annual financial statements was satisfactory that was submitted for audit, except for this one change that was effected. I know that might sound to be harsh, but the issue relates to supply chain management issues. So we'll debate with the committee in terms of how we pick the red rating instead of yellow or green. Under financial health, we're only picking up material underspending in terms of the budget. Then we'll also talk to issues around the overdraft where the department is currently sitting at, and there's history relating to that. I'll move on to section 2.21, where we are addressing the issue of supply chain management in detail. There was a contract where, from the audit perspective, we did not receive appropriate audit evidence to the effect that the 90-10 rule in terms of the preferential procurement policy framework was applied by the department. This was a case where a contract with the lowest points was basically recommended for the service provider to provide service to the department. But when we wanted to audit the entire process to say how was the motivation made, we had some shortcomings. And that resulted in the department incurring irregular expenditure of 12.4 million. So this was a change that was reflected in the annual financial statements, where initially it was not disclosed, but subsequently, when we agreed on the issue with management, this was basically disclosed in the financial accounting, in the financial statements rather. We also talked to the root causes and recommendation in terms of dealing with the issue. It's mainly making sure that all the provisions of the PPPRA Act is adhered to, and there's enough for the trail if the department is making recommendations for procurement services. 2.2.2 addresses predetermined objectives. I did highlight earlier that there were no significant issues. The department has managed to resolve the issues that we raised in the last audit 2010-2011. Under human resources, the only issue we wish to highlight here is that there's an overall vacancy rate of 33% as far as the department is concerned. In terms of senior management vacancy rate, it's sitting at 20%, and we're basically saying potentially this may impact on the service delivery in terms of the objectives that the department is pursuing as far as the plan is concerned. Root causes, briefly, it's attraction of people with the correct skills, and some of these positions relate to the restructuring process that was started very late by the department, and the recruitment process and the vetting process takes a bit longer before the position can be filled. So our recommendation is that the department should move swiftly in making sure that those vacant positions are filled so that there is no negative impact on service delivery imperatives. On information technology controls, there's key focus areas that we looked at as an office. We look at the IT governance framework, if it's in place, if it's applied by the department, where there's focus areas under the general control environment that we look at, issues around unauthorized access to the network, which may pose significant risks to the department if they are not properly addressed. We look at issues around formal procedures around backup restoration in case of disaster occurrences, where there might be fire or whatever emergency. The department should be in a position to continue operating as an entity. So the backup restoration procedures is looking to those type of risks. And another focus area is policies around access controls, unauthorized access to the network and information system. And one should mention that there's limitations to the national systems like us that are used by departments, where it is difficult to set up other control measures like your firewalls, and there's also dependencies to CETA to do some of the functions as well as DPSA. So, however, it is our responsibility to pick up these issues as far as the risk of fraud, sabotage, or massive disasters that I've covered earlier. We also analyze root causes around each element, where we say it is imperative that there's the adequate IT skills and capacity to deal with these issues, segregation of duties. We also mentioned the dependence on CETA, and mainly the key issue of e-nurses, where we say it's a very key system for the national department, that they need to make sure that the right people with IT skills to take over that system. On material emissions, which is 2.2.5, I did cover this issue. It relates to the irregular expenditure that was incurred by the department. It was subsequently disclosed in the annual financial statements. On financial health status, there's two issues we're talking through. It's understanding for the current budget, 2011-2012, which amounted to 320 million. The root cause was that the department revised its strategic plan due to new projects identified which needed to be undertaken during the financial year. This resulted in certain projects being delayed and the funding thereof, which resulted in this underspending of 320 million. Then the second issue is an overdraft of 1.4 billion. This relates to unauthorized expenditure of 1.2 billion that was incurred in 2008-09 and 2009-10 due to subsidy contracts. These authorized expenditure has not yet been condoned, meaning they have to be funded after condonement. So we know the process is in the pipeline. No authorization has been given, but the effect is that the department will continue operating in an overdraft position, where it's sitting at 1.48 billion currently. Other matters of interest, if I can skip the recommendation that we are making below, around the process of condonation, we wish to highlight a small, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Of 49,000, it's quite small, but if it's not attended to, it can end up being a bigger amount. Then irregular expenditure, including the 12 million that I've told you earlier, is basically sitting at 48.4 million. This was due to non-compliance with SCM policies and procedures, and it was adequately disclosed in the annual financial statements. Compared to 2010-2011, 20 million of irregular expenditure was incurred by the department. Other reports, there's an investigation that is being conducted around the CM compliance activities. At the date of this report, the investigation is still ongoing, and there's nothing to report under performance audit. Chair, this brings us to the conclusion of our brief. We are happy to take any questions.
Thank you very much. we want now to give an opportunity to members to raise, make comments and raise questions. Honorable Ngeli, you can. Honorable Bon. By all honorable Suka in that order.
Thank you, Tay. Tay, you have to understand that we are still tired. We are from constituency. We don't understand things well. It's our first day on duty. So even the question I'm going to ask might be confusion on me. What I really don't understand, maybe there's an explanation that I would understand, is the overdraft of 1 billion, what. And there's the underspending of 320 million. I just wonder, how can you understand overdraft at the same time. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I don't think that there is confusion. No, you are not at home. You are here. Honorable Oli.
Thank you, Chairperson. Is there any member of the department here who... Sorry, it keeps giving me trouble this mic. I just wanted to ask if there was any member of the department here, or we're only going to address our questions to the AG. Okay, thank you. If I could just ask then the AG's officials, the 12 million bid that was awarded irregularly, 12.47133, what was that invoice for, or that bid for? What could you just tell us, was it for security services, was it for purchasing of stationery? Do you know what the item's for, because it doesn't tell us in what department this irregular expenditure is, and the transport department is a very big department, so one just wants to know where the problem is occurring, what improper item it was. Then, is there any indication as to why, from the your engagement with the department, as to why they've got such a big vacancy rate? I know they're not here themselves. And then on page 8, you talk about 49,000 or 49 million? It looks like 49,000 for non-arrivals and no-shows. Just want to clarify that 49,000 rand. And any idea, was it for meetings that didn't occur? Was it for trains that were late? What was the no-show? I just wanted a little bit more information, obviously, because this is a summary. And if we can just get some indication, what that no-show was for. Thank you, Jeeva.
Honorable
Spook.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate the presentation that was made by the AG's office. I think some of my questions have been asked by the previous members. Except to say, the AG in relation to the sittings, why do we have still different systems when it comes to the management? I'm talking of PAS, PES and PESA, and for instance, PAS system is still draft, and yet it has been coming for quite some time. Do we have a system where we can be firm on it so that we avoid these loopholes that we are seeing happening now? Was the question of PAS, personal, others are using manual for that matter. Any of the thoughts to look into it? The second one, Chairperson, for me is it seems to me the department is struggling. When you show or display those different boxes, where it is red, it is where it is very critical for the department to run smoothly its finances, and it seems to me we are lacking. I just want to check what is our assistance to that, to the department, because I think it shows about 3 blocks, and those blocks are very critical, those boxes. I understand you did explain. But it gave sufficient support to the department in relation to its finances, human capacity, and so on. Because surely you are the custodian of the policies to that effect. I just want to check from you in that regard. Well, I will not speak to the 12 million. My last point, Chairperson, would be, you see, it's one thing to make a statement, because the leadership inefficiency when it comes to the fruitless expenditure and so on. I'm just wondering what happened to those officials who flouted the chain management in as far as awarding a tender. Should it just be a statement? Was there any serious action taken to against those members who flout the policies and the regulations, for instance, the question of bidding. The council was quiet, and now it came a statement. I don't know whether the law has taken its course to those perpetrators, or was it a deliberate omission? Normally they speak of a human error. Was that a human error, or what is it? My last take, the condemnation. The age you speak of to condone. That's quite a huge amount of money, 1.2 billion. It has not yet been condoned. Well, in the condemnation, to my little understanding, that you should say, well, let's take it as a foregone, we will not recover it and so on. What is your take through the agent on that coordination? Because it's a burden that is carried by the department on every financial year, and yet the outcome might be different. Can I check with the agent's office about this coordination of the 1.2 billion? Thank you, sir.
I will give the opportunity to the Office of the Auditor General to respond.
Thank you, Chair. My colleague Vine will cover some of the questions where details are required around the nature of the contract, details for no-shows. Let me start off by explaining the overdraft and understanding. The issue of overdraft comes from the previous period where the government spent more than what was allocated. That was 2008-09 for bus subsidy contracts. So what this means is that the department got an allocation from National Treasury for that particular year, but they spent more than the cash that they were given. So invariably, for them to pay for those service providers, they had to dip into their overdraft facility. So they were sitting with negative cash. So this relates to the question of condonement, which the process was bedded down, it was authorized. It's only the National Treasury that needs to fund the 1.2 billion. So meaning they need to get resources somewhere. My colleague will cover me in terms of details about the process. But what it means is that as long as the department is not giving the 1.2 billion as additional funded cash, they will continue having this overdraft in terms of the actual cash in their bank account. But however, if one looks at the cash that was given to, or the allocation given to department this year, there was an understanding of 320 million, which would basically reduce the total of overdraft slightly, because the less cash that was, there was a bit of extra cash that was available that was introduced by the department only for 2011-2012 financial period. I'm not sure if that covers my...
This is not the first time we are dealing with the issue of This is not the first time we are dealing with this issue. When the department appeared before SCOPA dealing with this issue, we were part of that. And our understanding as the Portfolio Committee on Transport is that that problem doesn't come from the Department of Transport. It is a problem that is created by Treasury. It gets reflected on the Department of Transport audit because it is the Department of Transport that has to pay service providers their subsidies. If the department doesn't do that, the service providers would go to court or they will stop providing the service to the people that need that service, which is transporting those people from point A to point B. The question that I'm asking is, what steps are taken by the Office of the Auditor General against Treasury? Because in not on this instance only that we find a similar situation where the problem will be reflected in the assessment of the performance of the Department of Transport, whereas the root cause of it doesn't come from the Department of Transport. One of those issues is the issue of the rural transport plan that was passed, approved by Cabinet, presented by the Department of Transport, approved by Cabinet, but only partially funded by Treasury. And Treasury is part of Cabinet. If Treasury believes that this plan will not be funded, Treasury has to, in my view, say that in Cabinet, and so that Cabinet can defer the approval until there is enough funding, so that the problem is not reflected as an underperformance or a regression by the department, because the department is charged to perform certain duties, provide, pay for the service, and if you don't pay for the service, you are taken to court. The similar situation happens when Cabinet approves a plan and the department presents the plan to us. Our understanding is that plan has to be implemented. And because of lack of funding, the plan doesn't get implemented. And who has to be punished? The question I'm asking is, does the Office of the Audit General pick up the problems that are identified when you're assessing the department and then go back to the root cause, to the Treasury, to say, Department A was supposed to have done this. They got a finding because there was less funding from yourself, yet Cabinet had approved that. Honorable.
Yeah, just a two fingers. Surely that can't be quite the total picture, though, because if a program is approved in theory by Cabinet, but you only get half the money to start it in this year, surely then you have to cut your cloth to suit the fabric that you have. I mean, you can't pay out money that you don't have, because then you get into a debt. So I'm not sure I entirely agree with that assessment. There's a time when you get funding when you have to adjust your business plan to the funding that's approved. The amount is like 100 billion. Then you must, your business plan must reflect the 100 billion, not the extra 20 billion that you would like, surely.
Honorable, I agree with you in this. In terms of the plan for rural transport development, that is what the department did. The department adjusted and did not implement the entire plan. It is an issue for us because we are public representatives. We would want the plan to be implemented. But in the case of bus subsidies, there is nothing that the department can do, because those people are providing the service. They are transporting people, contracted by the department has to pay those subsidies. If the department doesn't pay the subsidies, it gets taken to court. So the department is in a catch-22 situation. The question that I'm asking to the Office of the Auditor General is, when that situation occurs, does the Office of the Auditor General go to the Treasurer and ask them as to why they are not providing adequate funding? They punish the victim, because the department in my case is the victim of circumstances. The people require the service. The service providers are that they are providing the service. They need to be paid. And the person who has to pay is the Department of Transport. And the Department of Transport doesn't have adequate resources to pay service providers who have provided the service. And it is the Treasury that has not funded that service. So the department is in a question two situation. And which is why the department is forever having this overdraft, because it requires condemnation that then needs to be funded. So we have two separate issues. The issue of a plan that is approved by cabinet, not fully funded, and then the department adjusts it and doesn't implement it in totality. It becomes an issue for public representatives, because those people that voted us in want those services. The second issue is the service is already being provided. Bus subsidies. It is not the department that says we are not going to pay. It is Treasury that says we don't have money for you.
Thank you. I'll cover that question on two levels, because you're quite right. In cases where the department adjusts its objectives because of limited funding, we don't go to an extent of questioning Treasury about the portion that is not funded for. What we look at authorized budget and follow it through to what the department is planning to do for that particular period. It's a problem where they wouldn't adjust that objective, where it reflects more scope to be covered while the funding is less. It's important that the department should adjust whatever strategic objectives that they are pursuing in terms of limited resources that are located to it. I know you will...
So in other words, rob Peter to pay Paul.
I think our role is limited as an office. That's what I'm trying to articulate.
Can I question your role? Treasury is a department. It's not above other departments. It is a department that provides, that deals with allocating funds. Funds which are a financial indication of a problem of a department. It therefore can't, the Office of the Auditor General can't have a limited role when Treasury can't perform according to expectation. That is my view. Because all the time, departments get lambasted because of underfunding by Treasury, particularly on this issue of bus subsidy, and also on this issue of having to adjust the program of the department that cabinet approved, together with Treasurer sitting in that cabinet meeting, and they don't object. But when time comes for them to allocate funding is not available. To me, that is window dressing. You raise expectations to people who say, this is what are going to deliver as cabinet, including Treasury in that meeting. Outside the cabinet meeting, Treasury says, no, we are not going to give you enough resources for you to implement the plan that the entire cabinet agreed on. And when that happens, it is the problem of the department alone. If Treasury has got powers to ask questions to other departments, the Office of the Auditor General has got powers to ask all departments and all spheres of government, why did the Treasury can't be asked similar questions?
Thank you, Chair. Just to respond, fortunately I'm responsible for audit national treasury. It's in my portfolio. I think Treasury as an entity has its own programs as well, over and above doing the budget for the entire country and doing allocations that are the subject of the debate. So in terms of Treasury itself with their programs, we do report if there's underspending. I think if you look at the annual report this year, we've highlighted a huge underspending on their part. But I think the issue from the National Revenue Fund, where they do the allocation wider to the all tier of government, we look at issues where how much funding they've raised in terms of tax collections and how much has been brought in terms of the full allocation that they push to all tiers of government. And I don't recall any instance where the National Revenue Fund has been in a surplus position. So meaning, I'm not trying to answer for them. I'm basically saying, as far as the budget that gets through Parliament that is approved, we look at that entire process. And for the fact that there's additional funding where Treasury borrows outside to augment the tax revenue, it basically gives a picture that they are not sitting in a surplus position where we can say, Treasury, you do have additional funding. Why aren't you funding these condolences? We do look at the issues at those two levels. But you are quite right. I think it's the limitation I was trying to explain in terms of our role from the Public Audit Act.
I'm not an auditor. From a layman's position, I would see that as underperformance because they are unable to raise adequate funding to implement programs that have been approved, including the bus subsidy. And as a result, that gives this department red all the time. And there should be a way of shifting that red from the Department of Transport back to Treasury. Because it doesn't come from the department, it comes from Treasury. The root cause of the problem lies with Treasury. And the Office of the Auditor General had to find a way of highlighting that it's not in the making of the Department of Transport. They are the victims of the situation.
We are set to do that, Chair. Maybe we can facilitate the debate through you and maybe the chairperson of Portfolio Committee for Finance. Because, as you rightly put it, the last leg for this issue is to fund the overdraft. All the processes, as far as I know, are taking place, from SCOPA, authorization. It's only NRS getting to fund the overdraft. All right, can I move on to our questions?
Can we conclude on this one and say we will make a follow-up so that this issue can be rectified for good? It can't be a recurring situation and it doesn't get addressed. The root cause of it doesn't get addressed.
Correct, Chair, great. There was a question on the nature of service around the 12 million. My colleague will cover that. There was also a question why there's a huge vacancy rate, together with what constitutes 49,000 for no-shows. Let me try and cover the question on why do we have different systems, bars per cell. Basically here, these are all systems that are used by all the departments, which is bars per cell and lodges. As a matter of fact, there's been a project where National Treasury, CETA, and DBSA were looking at the IFMS system, which was one system that was mainly identified to resolve all the limitations around bus, portal, and lodges. That project is still ongoing, but as I've indicated, it's sitting with National Treasury and CETA in terms of the program. The idea is to replace the old transversal systems with one system that can basically integrate human resource data to finance, procurement, and other modules, as opposed to using different old system that has limitations in terms of security risks and access controls. There was a question on what are the ages of assistance to the department in terms of the finance and capacity issues in dealing with the ratings that we highlighted in the key focus areas. What we basically do as an office, we have quarterly engagements with management where we discuss key internal controls in the department. We look at leadership as one dimension. We look at finance and performance management as a second dimension, and we also look at governance dimension, which talks to internal audit committee and other areas relevant to the governance of the department. Basically, the objective of the quarterly engagement is to engage the department on all the risky areas that we pick up and weaknesses in control, where we say there's potential risk in this area, whether it's human resource management or reconciliations around finance, finance management disciplines, then the department should basically craft an action plan in addressing those issues. And as I've indicated, the process, we work as partners, we advise where it's possible as an AG office in terms of whether the suggested solutions are adequate or not. It's an ongoing process. It's mainly our contribution as an office in contributing to clean administration. But I must emphasize that we assist management as far as possible without really crossing the line and doing those activities for them. But by way of recommending, engaging on those solutions, it's a quarterly exercise, and there's a lot of improvements that we are beginning to see that are happening based on that process. And we take to an extent of engaging the internal audit as well as the audit committee around checking these issues. That is as far as our assistance goes. And even the team that does the audit, which is physically there at the department, there's a lot that they do in terms of picking up weaknesses, addressing the root causes with management, and make the necessary recommendations. Let me pause for now and give my colleague an opportunity to address the issues around the irregular contract with details thereof.
Thank you, Chair. The issue on the 12 million rand, that the bid that was awarded, was in respect of a conference, a hosting of a conference. The big vacancy rate, the root causes for that we've identified.
The follow-up question on that one of the conference. Which conference?
Unfortunately, I don't have that sort of detail here, Chair, but it was in respect of a conference that was being hosted by the department. We can commit to providing the chairperson with the details of it.
Yes, because in my view, a conference is not something that one would think of today and it happens the following week. Something that you plan for well in advance. And therefore, it would give the department enough time to go through all the procurement processes in terms of PFMA. Maybe if it was something like a disaster, a bridge had collapsed or something like that, it would be, we would have a better understanding. But if it is a conference, it is the department that gives a conference. So it's not something that you would think of overnight and then implement the following day, which will then justify why you did not follow the PFMA process. So we would want to get that information. We would also ask the same questions to the department.
Just to clarify that, the issue there was the department just followed the STM processes. It was just in terms of the application of the points, the 90-10 point system, where in the calculation of the points, they've calculated the points, but they have awarded the contract to the service provider that scored the lowest points rather than the service provider that scored the highest points. So just to clarify that, Chairman.
They didn't provide the reasons why they did that. Why a service provider that had got lower got appointed?
Chairperson, there was a motivation, but in our view, that motivation was not sufficient to justify the appointment of the service provider with the lowest points. The department indicated that the service provider that scored the highest points would not be able to deliver on the service, and we couldn't find any documentation to support that justification or to justify that reasoning. Chairperson,
thank you for that. We will follow that up with the department when we engage.
If I can carry on, Chairperson, the high vacancy rate, we touched on the key reasons for that being the delay in the finalization of the restructuring process, which was only concluded in November 2011. We touched on the inability of the department to attract suitably qualified and skilled people that is required, and also the appointment process from advert to having a warm body in your seat takes quite a long time. So that's the reason for the delay, or for the high vacancy rate at the end.
May you please repeat yourself?
Sorry, Chairperson. I said the high vacancy rate, the root causes of that was the delay in the restructuring process within the department. The restructuring was only concluded in November 2011, so it didn't allow them sufficient time until year-end to fill all the posts that were actually funded in terms of the restructured department. The second reason was the inability to attract the to attract the skills and experienced people that is required to fill those vacant posts that are within the department, so you don't find the right people all the time. And the third reason was the process of appointment from advert to having a warm body in the seat. That takes a significant portion of time. So that would give rise to the high vacancy rate in the department.
Sure, Chair. Can we maybe just provide the context why we are lighting this issue as key on vacancy rate? I think the restructuring from the department is trying to address an oversight for entities that are managing different modes of transport, whether it's rail, maritime, air travel. If one looks at the findings that we are picking up in the respective entities, we're basically saying there's no adequate level of oversight from the Department of Transport. So as soon as they fill these senior key vacancies, the department will be able to provide oversight in terms of how the public entities are performing in terms of the mandate with different modes of transport. I think that's where the link is.
On a
Honourable Onyis and Honourable Council.
Yes, Chairperson, just in terms of that 12,407,133, I just asked what was it for? Was it for security services or stationery or a very big contract? So clearly the AG knows what it was for. They can tell us, you know, some of the detail about it. What was it for?
It was, I don't know, I might be wrong, but it was first not disclosed. And later on, it was disclosed. What was the purpose?
Thanks, Chair. I just want to ask about the staff vacancies. It's a very high percentage, and no doubt it has had quite a significant impact on the efficient running of the department. Can we get a little bit more detail as to why it is so difficult to find these people? I mean, I find it hard to accept that it takes so long to find good people in a country where we have so many good people. And possibly if we could have some information, was it perhaps due to the fact that people were available but they didn't perhaps meet transformation objectives? What was the actual reason for that? I mean, are we actually making it hard for ourselves, or is it simply a case that there are no people available? If so, have we tried to entice people back to our country that have gone overseas and might fit the bill, have the requisite experience in the department? Can I have a little bit more detail on that rather worrying number or statistic about how many vacancies there are?
Maybe Jefferson, for me, I would like to match on that question with the department when they give the annual report, because it's a matter. The AG's office is just lifting up the matters. I think we'd have to latch on the department very seriously on these matters. Maybe the picker has changed since 2011, 2012, 2013 going forward. But Jefferson's mind is around also on the issue of these different systems that we have been told. The logis, the bus, the PESAL, you name them. I just want to check with the AG's office, when can we have a common system for the department? Because it has been coming for quite some time. If you can ask you, I'm sure it's more than how many years now, is it profit or getting it right? Quite a number of years, and it does not go with that. There's financial implication on the matter. So I just want to check from yourselves your understanding or your thinking as to say by this time or in the next financial year we'll be having a common system so that to avoid the loopholes that we are encountering now. And my last one, Chairperson, is around the investigation. How long is this investigation of going to take place? Because look, we're talking of 2011, 2012, and we are going forward 2012, 2013 for this investigation. And I'm not sure how far are you in that. Are we expecting that you might conclude this investigation before the end of this financial year? Or is it too huge amount to the extent that you are unable to say, at least you would expect that this investigation to be concluded by this time around? I just wanted to check the time frames on both questions, technically speaking, because you can't just leave it open to say we are developing. We are developing without saying we are working towards this finality. Well, on the issue of, because I'm also very much interested on the vacancy rate. Look, 20 million citizens, and we've got tertiaries and everything else, but yet we can't attract. Maybe it's because of the package is too little, relatively speaking, to the private sector. What could it be the reason? So that we improve where we need to improve and attract the right people, the right skills at the right time. Thank you, sir.
To you, sir.
Okay, before you respond, Mina, I also want to add on the question asked by my colleague on the issue of skills. And I will start by commenting before I ask a question. In my view, I think that skilled people are in the private sector as consultants. And in the department, there are people we have a system, that's my view, that makes it impossible to attract people into departments who have requisite skills because of the outsourcing system that we have. We went to China. The Department of Transport is an engineering-based department, and it is run by engineers. The entity of transport as a whole, is an engineering-based department. Civil engineering, structural engineering, what was the process? So we found people in those departments and the entities who are engineers. In our situation, the engineers are sitting, people who have companies that are consulting in the department, some of them are people who worked for the department as engineers. And the system of outsourcing, not doing in-house, is actually encouraging that to happen. And then it becomes difficult to attract those people to come and be in the employment of government. For as long as we have an outsourcing type of a system. Question that I'm asking them to the Office of the Auditor General. When you are looking at the figures paid by the department and various entities to consultants to do the work that is supposed to be done in-house, what findings, how do you relate to that? Can it be termed as lack of capacity? Or can it be termed as the department delegates its responsibility to the private sector? Because if in another country we find people working with those skills, and in this country we find people who have skills sitting outside and called in, Northwest, when we visited Northwest, in July 2011, 110 consultants were working for the Department of Transport in Northwest, one department.
Thanks. I wish to ask my colleague to maybe finish up the issue on the contract, because he was addressing it earlier, but there's still questions from the members. Then we take the rest of the new question.
Thank you, Chair. The issue on the bid that was awarded, I did indicate that I will provide you with the details. It was for a conference, but the exact details we will provide to you, Honorable Chair. That's the 12 million. Yes. And then the question on not disclosed and then disclosed, the department had disclosed the expenditure. The expenditure was incurred, but it just wasn't disclosed as irregular expenditure because the department was of the view that it was awarded regularly, and on that basis it wasn't irregular expenditure. Only through the audit process did we confirm it was irregular expenditure, and then the department disclosed that. So hence the non-disclosure and then disclosure. The issue on the investigation, this investigation into the awarding of that body is being done by the public protector and not by our office. So we cannot commit to timelines on that, Chairperson.
Thanks once again. On the question of the completion of the new system, which is IFMS, as a matter of fact, there's been significant delays in the project. But I wish to report that some of the modules are in a testing stage. In Limpopo, I think they are testing the asset module. In National Treasury, they are testing the procurement module and the HR module. It's quite complex to say when is the system going to be finished. I think one of the limitations as far as the project is concerned was that CETA was battling to attract the right IT skill set that will run with this project and deliver in terms of the agreed time frames. So that is one of the contributory factors that caused the delay in delivering IFMS. And there have been financial implications, as a matter of fact, but I think the team that is leading the project, they are using a system where they pay after the project milestone has been met. So from our level as an office, where we're looking at the system from the governance level, we don't have issues with the amount of spending that was expended for IFMS. But however, we are concerned with the delay of the project. We are engaging with the Minister of Finance, including the Deputy Minister, in terms of looking at the limitations and devising the way forward. But in terms of the timeline, I'm not in a position to say currently. When are we... If I'm not mistaken, it's the project comes from 2007. Cabinet memo that was approved. It's a long time. There's only been significant delays.
So, Captain, that's why I am a bit worried. And as we improve the technology, we will be also always falling behind. And if you say 2006-2007, the project then started. Well, in 2012 now, and yet it seems there's no light going forward. It's a matter of seconds, and I think we need to take up the matter to another level. Otherwise, it's just like a missing cow, you know, for quite some time. I'm not happy. I'm raising this matter very sharply. And there are many systems that they are using, including the manual one. Because when this project started, it started as a pilot project in Limpopo, interesting. But now it's elsewhere, and we don't have the outcome of that pilot project, and it's still continuing. So it can't be unabated. We should take matter up further. Thank you, sir.
On the issue of skills, there's a number of variables that comes into play, Chairperson. The system of outsourcing, quite likely, it might be contributing to lack of attraction of skills. Because you know for the fact that the private sector is paying premiums for highly skilled people. And if one look at the structure in government where DBSA is setting salary scales for senior management, that is also a limitation, which has a negative bearing on attraction of skills. Even from the IT level, we know for the fact that most of the departments are battling to attract CIO, chief information officers, because of those limitations. But yeah, I think our role as an office, we look at the impact of service delivery and raise these issues to relevant departments where there's really key vacancies to say they need to fill those vacancies, but more than that, we can't really do much as an office. Because there's dynamics in the country, and maybe I can stop at that.
No. We appreciate the explanation. It empowers us because even on field vacancies, there is a challenge. The overuse of consultants, in my view, indicates that the one body sitting in the position doesn't have the requisite skills and therefore relies and depends on the consultant to come and advise and do the work for the person who is sitting on that position. The fact that in the department, you are saying to us, the person, the restructuring of the department speaks to the four modes of transport, which in my view would then mean that the DDG for that looks after aviation should be a person with aviation. And the DDG that looks after the public road transport should be a person that has got engineering capacity in terms of road transportation. And the person who looks after maritime should be a person that has got engineering in maritime, who has studied maritime. And the person that looks after rail should be a person that has got a rail engineering capacity, so that you would understand even the terminology that is used. You would even have an understanding of when you go to a railway line, you are not, if there are defects, you are not dependent on an outside person to tell you what is wrong with this railway line. So I've been waiting for this kind of an engagement, because that is why in the beginning of this year we called the department, the human resource unit of the department, to come and share with us the human resource and the skills development plan. If there are no skills in the country, the department should therefore be pointing out the kind of skills that are required for the Department of Transport, not only at national level, but also in provinces and in all spheres of government, so that we are then able to produce those skills. We can't sit with a problem of saying we can't fill the vacancies, because to me, it is not only the question of the vacancies that we have. It also speaks to the over usage of consultants, 110 for one department. And consultants are profit driven. Therefore, we will forever be spending a lot of money and getting no value for money. For as long as we don't have people who are patriotic, who are inside the government structures and in the department with the skills that are required in those posts. Thank you very much for sharing that information with us. It is very, very important information, because it relates to the skills development plan in relation to transport development in the country. What type of skills do we require, and how we are going to produce those skills? Which institutions are going to produce those skills, and how do we then fund the process of developing those skills? And if there are skills that have left the country, how do we attract them back? It's very, very important. Thanks.
Maybe one last comment for you, Chair. Just to caution the committee. There was a performance audit that was done on the use of consultants. The report is in the process of being tabled. It will be a public document, I think, in a matter of few months. So I can't recall if Department of Transport was covered, but it's a very important report that picks up the issue that we are raising on utilization of consultants, no management, no transfer of skills, etc., etc.
I hope that that report shares the same concerns that we have. We are not happy in terms of what we saw in the province. Honour.
Actually, just a very quick one. The 49,000 Rand wasteful and frequent expenditure for no shows on arrivals, is that also for conference, and is it for the same conference where we have the 12.4 million Rand issue we've been speaking about?
Thank you, through your chair. 49,000, it was for flights and accommodation that was not cancelled in a timely manner. And it was not related directly to the 12 million conference that was arranged.
A follow-up. Flights and accommodation for the staff
that travel.
For staff that travel.
Yes.
They book flights, they don't cancel on time, and then the 49,000.
Yes.
Okay, they don't have to pay back if they're not cancelled on time.
That will be your question if you have to go to the department.
Okay. No, it's very, very... The question that I have, that is the last one, is on if you can assist that when the department was engaged on the 12 million, when you engaged the department, you were given a reason that the department awarded the contract to a service provider with lower cost because the one that had got higher points, in their view, was not going to be able to deliver. That is an assumption. Did they provide information as to what made them to come to that conclusion? Was this company that had got high point, they did not have the capacity in terms of experience or in terms of financial resources that if they are given work, they cannot fund the work that they are given? Or was it a new company? Or did the company have a history of underperforming? Because it can't be that one would just conclude that, yes, you have got high points, but in my view, you can't perform.
Yeah, but as I indicated earlier, we were not given any documentation to support that motivation. We did inquire and we did request information on that, but we were not provided with anything, so that was our conclusion that the service provider that scored the highest point should have been awarded, if not the first, or not the highest, then there was a second highest as well that could have been awarded it, and we were not provided with anything.
Surely there's a problem there. I mean, if the Auditor General requests information in the process of an audit, then how can the department refuse to make the information available? It's almost contempt for process. I mean, I don't know the necessary, the relevant clause in the Equal Act, but I would imagine that is totally offside and that you cannot actually do that. I'm amazed that we are so relaxed about the fact that this has happened. I mean, I would have expected a complaint from somebody. Thank you.
Chairperson, as I said initially, that I think the AG has make us aware, and they did probe on the board. Already the president is for us. When the department here, because they got the DGs, the DDGs, and the line functions. Maybe you should go to the line function directorate who is handling these matters, and then maybe from the DG, what recourse have you taken to address the situation where documents are not presented at the time of auditing and so on. So I would persuade my colleagues that these matters are much provoking. But let's shoot to the right direction, the right people, where the department is here. I also have my own questions, but I don't want to shoot here, because I think that the AGSB are very wise. We did probe and for clarity and so on. But for further, I think let's go to the department. That's my view. Otherwise, they will be unable, because the DG must bring along the line functions to see what happened. Because also he himself will get out, what do you call, the end result of this. That did not happen. Thank you, sir.
Also, I want to highlight here that these questions that we are asking to, first of all, the Office of the Auditor General is giving us ammunition, giving us, it's the mirror that is assisting us to see what is happening in the department. And the question that we are asking to the Office of the Auditor General is the question that clarifies our mind and also tries to check whether we are on the same wavelength with the Office of the Auditor General in terms of the red lights that we see. The red lights that would then give us the part of to question the department and hold the department accountable. That is what is happening here. And I agree with the question that is asked by Honorable Crombro. That question also, and all of these questions that we have asked, relate to the recourse that needs. My understanding of what he is asking is, when the department failed to provide the Office of the Auditor General with the information as to why service provider has got the highest point was not awarded, service provider number two, service provider, we don't know what the lowest one was in terms of the rating, we don't know. But what is of more interest to us is what made the department to come to a conclusion that the service provider that has scored the highest point was not able to perform. The second one also was not able to perform. And the one that had scored the lowest is able to perform, because the process doesn't start when you are scoring. It starts when you are shortlisting. And you wouldn't shortlist people that do not have the capacity. By the time you arrive at the scoring of the point, you have also gone through the first process of shortlisting.
So things to clear to you, sir. When we are looking at the documentation around the contract, information was there. It had gone out of tender. But we need to emphasize that when we look at the lowest bidder being given a contract, it's more like a deviation that limits motivation. So what we are sitting with as auditors was not adequate to justify that that motivation or what. does correct the fact that the information is was not given. It was given. But in terms of us making the adjustment, in terms of the prescripts and all the legislation involved, we are not APS auditors. I think even if you engage the department, it should be at that level. And the issue is quite material, just to answer the second question. That's the reason why management had to change the financials to disclose this 12 million, so that the users can actually see that in the expenditure that the department has expended, so much has been irregular to the users of financials. So it's disclosed there, it can lead to a qualification. But if management had not disclosed, then we'd be saying the reflection to the users, it's not fairly presented, then it would qualify from the audit. I just wanted to clear it.
Also, was there a way in which the value for money was then measured in terms of this lowest bidder having been awarded the contract? Or is it a question that we can... You could not assess that. It's us who have to ask those questions to the department to say the lowest bidder was awarded, and then did we get value for money from this lowest bidder? The lowest bidder performed to the expected standard.
We can't tell, Chair, because it would have been part of the motivation, if any, but we had limitations. But maybe to have the committee with the practical experience on the ground, particularly around contracts that relate to conferences, it's a bit complex. I'm not answering for the department, but I'm just sharing the experience in the other audits that I perform. You find a situation where the law says if a contract exceeds 500,000, it should go out on tender. There's nothing wrong with that. But you find that a specific conference would require so many breakaway rooms, last day this has to happen. You find that a beer that falls the highest points wouldn't necessarily provide that. That is required for a specific conference. So that would require some form of deviation. But as a department, if you don't have a formal policy that says, in cases where we do accommodation or training as an example, I would want a training for a specific service provider, I wouldn't necessarily get quotes. But if you don't have policy that excludes that type of transaction to say, I'm allowed to deviate as an accounting officer based on ABCD, from the audit, it becomes a problem because you don't have that authority base that says this is a specific provision in our policy where this is how we adjudicate accommodation. Where there's exceptions, the accounting officer has a right to motivate and authorize the deviation. So some departments, some entities are doing it correctly, some are not doing it in terms of deviations. And that's why we pronounce in some of these contracts to be regular. Thanks.
Are there any other questions or comments from members? If not, we would like to take this opportunity to thank the Office of the Auditor General and say that we are empowered to engage with the department. Thank you. Then move to item number 2. You can be excused. Small bus operators. Before they make their presentation, I would like to explain why we invited them here. They first wrote me a letter to which I responded that they were asking to meet with me. They met with me to raise a few issues that I thought required the head of the portfolio committee. One of the issues is that one, they are not subsidized. Like other companies are, and they feel that they are disadvantaged in terms of our constitution and discriminated against in terms of our constitution. And most of them operate in rural areas, which then brings us to the second issue, that they are saying the roads on which they operate have a negative impact on the lifespan of the bus itself. They again is no uniform approach in terms of looking at how the issue of the rural roads that they operate on impacts negatively on their buses. And they make an example of the taxi industry, that there was tax recapitalization for them, and they now they are not part of that. And then they make the issue of the ATCO buses that are subsidized and other buses, and they are not part of that. The third issue that they are raising is the issue of competition with subsidized companies, but at the same time with type of vehicles that are not designed to transport people. Like, in areas where they operate, you would find them operating and trucks operating instead of buses, and in some situations, tractors, like workers in farms transported by trucks and other vehicles that are not designed. So in a nutshell, they are saying that, but also they are saying that there is a slow movement from the department side in assisting them to become a national structure of small bus operators that will speak in one voice and be in a position of tabling their issues and be responded to. And their feeling is that the portfolio committee can assist in terms of what they shall be presenting. So that is why there is this meeting. And I don't think that the nature of the meeting is actually to say we can't discuss in detail, but we can hear and then decide on how we would then respond moving forward. So I see this engagement as the beginning of the process. It's not a meeting where we are going to take decisions that they are ending now. Thank you. I would hand over to...
Good day. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ash Porter. I'm part of the Executive Committee of the Small Bus Operators within the Western Cape. I do not have a bus myself, but since 2002 I've been working with the group, and through this presentation you will see what it is that we have done in the past, what we're currently doing, and what is the way forward. I also want to extend some greeting from the rest of the small bus operators in the rural areas. They've asked me just to say hello to you all, because they do know that we are here today. What I would like to do is just to go through this particular presentation. I'm going to try to be really brief. there's a lot more details to it. However, due to some of the time constraints, we will only touch on these areas. The bottom line, once we are done, the question that we want to leave with you will be, what kind of assistance will you be able to give us out there in the trenches? So we are saying that we are needing you. We need support because we have tried all areas and we are not getting anywhere. We have solicited the support of various governmental departments within Western Cape, and we do believe that we have just forced to be there today. So we solicit and need your support. The Western Cape Small Buffer Operators Council would like to extend our thanks to, firstly, to the Portfolio Committee for gracing us with your presence and allowing us to make this presentation. But at the same time, we want to thank the National Department of Transport out in Pretoria, who has worked with us since 2009, especially during 2012, where they have actively assisted us with our formalization process. They have put in the time and the effort for that, and I can actually say when we begin to show you, but a little bit later, some of our successes, that we have a momentous occasion that's awaiting us at the end of this particular month. Also, the Department of Transport locally has also supported us with our formalization process. They have spent quite a bit of money in allowing us to travel across the Western Cape so that we can get to know who are our members who are out there, so that we can today have a comprehensive database. And for that, we are also thankful. What I want to do briefly is just to touch on the six goals and objectives that this particular industry has set for itself. The first one is to set a provincial business unit. In our particular province, we do have one that has been set up in 2008 already, and that's a key component. The next part that we would want to establish and to take root as from the month of November is a center of excellence, and today I've also heard about skills development, also heard about lack of competency within the industry. What we want to tell this particular committee is that we are actively engaging with an audit. The audit in the Western Cape is almost done. We're also assisting some of the other provinces. We just came from the Northern Cape with an audit as well being done. So we will be able to be the forerunners for our own industry. We are not waiting and looking for handouts in terms of who's going to assist us. We will make sure that we will use international norms and standards. We will get the best practices within South Africa to run the Centre of Excellence. The Centre of Excellence is not a training academy. The Centre of Excellence will be a component within our mechanisms to ensure that whatever plans and objectives that we have set for ourselves, that we will be able to monitor it, that we will be able to evaluate it, we will be able to understand what are those risks, and then we will be able to come up with contingencies. Part and parcel of the purpose of the Centre of Excellence is also to look at what kind of infrastructure do we require, how are we going to do the necessary research, and we will find amongst ourselves how we can to educate and give these people the necessary skills. We fully understand how the system works in South Africa with the CETAs. We do have a plan in place, and once we have been fully established at the end of the month, we will engage with all the role players and stakeholders. The third component in terms of our goals will be to engage government on all small bus operator matters that relate to the poor road conditions, the licensing issues, operations of law enforcement agencies, and the management of all transport matters. This is something that we have discussed at length. We do have a proper strategic plan. However, we need to move now from a strategic plan to an operational plan, and this is where we will be needing the support and assistance. And we do believe that without that kind of support, we are not going to get anywhere, and these are the reasons as to why we are here today. The fourth area is the lobbying with government to assist with the draft of funding models. We do believe that there are sufficient money within South Africa after we've paid our taxes. If you look at the money that's being spent on one particular company or two or three or four or five, we do believe that there can be such a thing as assisting the small bus operators so that we can be part of the mainstream economy. There's no need for us every time to receive handouts. We've been part and parcel of the election since 1994, and most of our operators are third and fourth generation operators. The fourth area is our participation in the IPs, and the IPs, our members are very, very clued up, and we do believe that we will be able to play an active role, and a strategic document outline how we can do that. and therefore we need your support. And lastly, in terms of our goals and operations, sorry, goals and objectives, is that we are in the process now of designing a beautiful communication strategy. I have to say that the Department of Trade and Industry has met with us already, and they have started to put some plans together in terms of our website design, our means of communication, corporate identity. They have started with that. But that in itself will just give us a beautiful office with a beautiful face, beautiful map, but no teeth. Hence the reason why we are here today. All of these plans that we are talking about are in line with national plans, and I do believe that we have a national representative here that can confirm that all of these plans, all 6 points, are exactly what is going to be rolled out in all the other provinces. And we are quite happy for that. However, in our province, we do need the support of all stakeholders. I just put up a picture then of some of our seniors within our province, and we want to say that we have difficulty reaching them. It's easier for us to get hold of the chairperson of the portfolio committee. I'm sure it's easier for us if we have to make an appointment with our president to get an appointment with our president. We've been trying now for years just to speak to these gentlemen, to tell them what it is that we're doing and how they can support us and how we can move forward. Hence the need and the reason as to why we are here today. Our successes, as I've explained, we do have a comprehensive database that we've worked on. We've got the buy-in of all the operators. I can seriously say of all the operators, because the Department of Transport locally has spent a lot of money to take us to furthest points. And we've had conferences there, we had discussions, we've stayed in beautiful hotels, and we've worked. So yes, we've touched everyone in the rural areas. These are some of the dates, and those dates signify a significant event that took place. So I'm not going to go into all of those dates. We do have a provincial constitution that we have designed ourselves, that we've worked with ourselves. The department wanted to support financially with this, but the consultant that they wanted to give did not meet our requirements. We wanted to do these things ourselves and not pay millions of rand to a consultant to do it that don't understand who we are, where we come from. We do have a beautiful strategic plan that's in line with the national strategic plan, and that's all done. And then we've also prepared our districts for elections. I can tell you now, yesterday, I received a call while I was out there in Kimberley that the province are busy going to different areas to start with the elections. I don't know why they are doing it right now. We've been trying to get them to do it since the beginning of the year, but I know that we are here today, so they will be able to report that they are doing that now. But by the time we prepare the slide, nothing happened. Also, we have to indicate that the Department of Trade and Industry, the enterprise components, they are working behind the scenes as we speak to make sure that we are properly corporatized. But once again, we will be corporatized, but we will not have any teeth. Our concerns, we are not being recognized. We are recognized by the National Department of Transport. They were in our province. They came to verify whether our structures are sound, and when we presented our soundness, once again the Department of Transport has walked out. And whatever reasons they wanted to give, and we will be able to tell you that they don't want to hear our plight. So if they don't hear, there's no need for them to respond. They were there, they greeted, and I can tell you now they walked out within 10 minutes in the presence of National. National came all the way from Pretoria, spent lots of money, and did not even have the decency. I'm speaking on behalf of National. I'm saying what we are experiencing. And they didn't even have the decency to sit through the process so that we can formalize and conclude our processes. The only discussions that we've had so far was with, I can't even say middle management, it's actual fact it's lower management. And when we have sent through our requests, he himself will write a request in front of us, whether the email is going through or not. But I can tell you now, nobody in serious middle management positions, not in the HOD, I'm talking about lower than the HOD, they're not interested. We've sent letters to the mayor, we've sent letters to the MEC himself, and you know, we are not a group of people that will throw stones. We will not burn tires. We will not blockade the city.
We have a legacy that we've got an evolutionary approach to what we want, because this is a third and fourth generation operation here. It didn't start yesterday. We don't want to take away from somebody else. We just want to make sure that we will grow, we will sustain ourselves, and we will be part of the first economy. And we are not given that opportunity, not even to talk. The BRT rolling out, I saw yesterday in the newspaper, laying around here, I wasn't in Cape Town to see it. But we are talking about the billions being rolled out at the exclusion of those who have been here since the 1800s, the 1900s. The year 2000, we are still being excluded, and we are imploring us to seriously look at our plight. The lack of support for further services. The support that we are getting is to get ourselves formalized. Yes, let us not be ungrateful. We've seen the assistance. But what does it mean when we are formalized, having a nice office? They're not looking for an office for. So they're going to put us in this nice office in Nierengracht or somewhere on the waterfront, wherever, up there in a beautiful building, have a nice office, but it's going to mean squats. It's going to mean nothing. We want to make sure that we can be, that we can participate. We've got the expertise across the province. We've got the support from other provinces that will lend a hand as well. And because we lend a hand in our province as well, because we were in a Northern Cape now, to assist them as well. So looking at Africa, we've got over 2,000 operators employing, I'm not going to give the figures now, I must say it wrong, but we've got a huge amount of people that we employ. So we do have the support. The province and after designed MOU. So we designed MOU for Mahal for free. We did it. We gave them an MOU, and that MOU is in line with a national MOU that has been signed by all the representatives of all the provinces, came together, national. They have then coordinated, oversaw this process, and make sure it's legitimate. They signed, I think it was Mr. George Marcellella, he signed the document, and giving the commitment that the provincial departments individually need to do this as well. In the Northern Cape, it's done. I saw the document. It's done. In our province, it's not even, the MEC doesn't even know that there is this document needs to be signed. The HOG, I'm sure, doesn't know anything, because middle management is bottlenecking, is preventing it to come to the top. Whatever the reasons are, I need this, not I, sorry, my apologies, we need this particular house to look into the matter and deal with it, to find out what are the stumbling blocks, the linkages that's preventing us. So there's no support for our services. So what we are saying is no provision for support officers. Okay? So we're doing quite a number of work. People are working free. People are giving up. They're taking money from their own pockets now for the past 2 years. I know. Because of me having to do my work, I can tell you now that some of the members that here, they put an amount. It is minimal, little, but I'm telling you, like, it helps. It at least it pays for the petrol for me to drive around to do the work that needs to be done. However, so much more needs to be done, and we need it. Our way forward is that we want to make sure that our formalization is going to be done. I do know, as today and yesterday, one of my colleagues told me this morning that they are out there in the districts, but we are running that schedule. At the end of this month, National will be launching the National Small, so the South African National Small Bus Operators Council. We must have a rightful place as a province. We are not satisfied that we must lag behind. I'm sure that when it comes to skills development and all other areas of support, this province will spend more money than any other province, but not in the area where it really matters. Okay? So we're asking this House to take note of this so that we can be truly represented. Our implementation, the implementation of a strategic plan has huge benefits to governments. The cities don't need to find and spend millions of rands in databases and to try to find out in our industry who is there. We are doing it part and parcel of our passion. They don't need to find out what's happening in terms of poverty alleviation. Our audit is so vast. It covers those areas as well. We know exactly how many buses we have. We know the condition of those buses. We know all of that kind of information. The document is 4 pages long, the audit. That information will be readily available for government so the money can be spent in the correct areas. The industry itself will benefit hugely from what it is that we're doing. And I think by now, you will have an understanding, especially when we talk about on district level, the IDPs and the IDPs that need to be developed, we will be able to give a contribution. We don't need to spend money on consultants to tell you the information. We have it. And we will prevent ourselves, because part of our national strategy is that one individual within a particular district or within a municipality must sit in those discussions, participate for free, and then give input and understand what the district or the municipality are doing. Our commuters will be able to be in an environment where they will be safe if we get the support. The general public will find employment with us. It will be decent employment. We've got a serious plan when it comes to our social responsibility. We've got a special sector or section that deals with that. And we are saying that we want to roll this out to anyone. Your role in our province, House, is that we want you just to tell those people to give us an opportunity. As you have given us an opportunity, we have never had this opportunity in our own province here in the Western Cape. So we're asking you to do that. It takes a lot of courage. You see that big guy? You see that? You see that big sumo wrestler? We are small, so it takes a lot of courage from us. They can take a long, hard look. You can't push the guy over. We need you to help us so that we don't want to push you out of the way, but the bottlenecks. Our ex-president, the Honorable Mr. Mandela, it took a lot of courage from him to do what he has done. Today we are celebrating. Today we enjoy the fruits of his courage. We are asking of this house to have him with courage so that it does not skip you today. Because it's true that courage sometimes skips a generation. I'm glad in that particular generation it did not skip those hard days of ours who gave up so much. Don't let this opportunity pass us by. Thank you, Honorable Chair, for giving us this opportunity. I know it was short, it was brief. We did not give all the information required, but due to your time constraints and respecting the time constraints, this is all we want to say, and we will allow you, if possible, to ask questions.
Thank you. Before I give members an opportunity to ask questions, when you came to my office, my understanding of the issue was that you have these challenges that I have outlined. You want to be part of the national structure. You are assisted by the national department. You would want to have the same assistance coming from there. However, I wouldn't want us to approach this matter from a perspective of pointing fingers at any particular person, because you are affected by the situation. Our approach should be to say you find yourself frustrated and you have come to the portfolio committee because you understand that we provide oversight to the department, and also we have power to call any person to give us information on any particular matter. My understanding also of the system is that Honorable Kala is part of the MINMEC, where these decisions are taken of how to establish the structure. And the national department has got a responsibility of coordination. The starting point on our side would be to engage with the department, the national department, to facilitate a situation where, one, we get an understanding of the role
that is played by them and the role that is supposed to be played by the province in terms of setting up the, making sure that there is one body. And then to also understand how they communicate with the provincial government in terms of playing the different roles, because we don't want to approach issues from a perspective of pointing fingers. We want to facilitate a situation where there is we want to ease the frustration that you have, but at the same time we don't want to apportion the blame, because you are on the receiving end. You would not be in a position of knowing who is responsible for what and who has done what, how. That's what we need to facilitate. So in my view, I would want to hear from your presentation more of the things that you want to be assisted in doing, more than who does what and who has not done what. I don't know that I'm making myself clear.
So you do.
For me, the issue should not be so-and-so has not done this, so-and-so has not done this, so-and-so has not done this. The issue for me should be, this is what we would want to see happening. This is what we have done on our own. This is what we have been assisted with by this particular structure. This is what we would like to see happening from this other structure. But not to come to conclusion that a particular structure or a particular person, because it may not be true that the management doesn't communicate to a senior management or to the MEC. It may be true that you are getting frustrated because you don't have an access to him, or maybe he has not even seen your document. So we don't want to discuss that into detail. We will deal with that. What we want to hear more are where you are in terms of your businesses and where you would want to be as a structure. Because when you were presented to me, you were able to say that you passengers pay so much. Particular structures are subsidized by so much. And in your situation, you are not. That is what you presented to me. You also presented the issue about the road conditions and linked that to the issue of the subsidy, and you also linked it to say you are treated differently from the tech industry at this company. I also raised my own issues to say we also need to look at the licensing people in view of the fact that there is a bus here in the Western Cape that killed a number of children. It was a small bus operator. It went, stopped, taken out of the road, went to a testing ground, it was not fit to transport the children. 30 minutes later, it was fit. That was not done by the MEC for transport. It was not done by the traffic department. It was done by somebody who issued a certificate that this bus can transport. In a few minutes after that, children were killed. It glanced. Got involved in an accident. Those are the issues that we would want to hear, because we all have to find solutions to the issues that are affecting you. So I would want you to speak more about the issues that are affecting you as a bus industry, not necessarily to portion a blame. because it will not ask us to approach issues from the position of portion display. You raised, when you were in my office, you raised the issue of the vents, that the vents are taking to passengers. Honorable Ngelen, honorable.
Thank you, Chair, though already you've covered me. I had a problem as to where does the request come from. Is it from the Western Cape group only, or there are representatives from other provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, or what? Or is it Western Cape trying to reach and organize other provinces? What is happening now? Thank you.
You've put this matter into perspective, because I was going to make a simple request off the record. because we have corrected that perspective, we put it correctly, we should not look into personalities. We should rather look into the systems of bettering the lives and making your movement much easier. For me, first and foremost, the document is not covering what you are raising. Because it should be more of substantive matter rather than the structural issues in the document. Because I don't know them. If you talk to me, it just went on straight to the golden of justice. I don't get the sense of their structure. Is he holding a particular position in the small business operators or what? So I was a bit confused, a little bit, to say whom I was speaking here. It was because I did not get an introduction to say you've got a structure, these are the people, and these are on these positions. And as such, we are consulting you to accord us, but those that above would like to meet all government structures at all levels, including the Western Cape, the mayors, the municipalities, because in what you are raising or what they have raised, I think they do speak of the IDPs and ITPs, and as such, surely those ITPs can't be stand alone when they are no stakeholders of their caliber. And I find it very difficult to understand them not being able to, not being invited to those ITPs when they are public hearing to make your input so that you are recognized equally to the government of the Western Cape. So, I still need to get some more clarity. I can't imagine that a government can work without its stakeholders. Well, this is a key stakeholder if you talk of small operators and not getting a hearing. There is an anomaly. I would not believe that, not unless otherwise, or you're communicating in writing your letters. Because they are in the website, everywhere, they are, I would assume, accessible. Well, you should write figure with the MEC. He or she will respond. In writing. So I'm saying this issue of communication is a matter of that needs to be looked into, but I think the chat testing has put to me all my our fears. Rather, let's look into your fundamental challenges, and which will lead to a certain extent maybe to a workshop, so that there is a buy-in by other stakeholders who are in the industry. Leading to your national structure that you want to establish very soon. So, I'm limited to input because I saw this presentation is very limited, substantively speaking. It needs to be worked out and more clearer on those matters we feel very strong. But in the communication, meeting people, surely there are people who can facilitate that. The committee do accept you, we do hear what you are saying. And any person who is disadvantaged by the system, the court is there to assist everybody, as we have done to you. We do to other people also to give them a hearing and advice accordingly. And it's for the members, or that particular stakeholder, to take the process forward. Thank you, Chair.
This microphone works this time. Just a point of clarity and a question. I just SMS'd MEC Robin Carlisle while he was chatting. He said he spoke at your conference in 2010. Is that right? Anyway, he doesn't have a copy of your MOU, so if you blood, I'm sure he will attend it immediately. But that's an administrative thing. I mean, if you really...
Thank you, Timothy. I'm a bit worried, having listened to the presentation, in terms of what is the request from small taxi, I mean small bus operators. I'm getting worried that we attempted to, because the week was correct from the ANC to say the engagement on this matter is quite limited. My worry stems from the fact that we attempted to engage on a national scale, when we're actually engaging with a provincial structure. And in accordance with the presentation that was put before us, the gentleman said that they are going to have a national gathering later this month, which is where a national structure will be formulated. Common sense therefore dictates that after such a national gathering and a national structure is formed, that national structure will then to have a session with us as National Portfolio Committee on Transport. Now, my worry is, if I attempted to engage with them on a national scale, I think it's a bit premature, because that is the kind of engagement that we need to have with them after they come from the conference, which is later this month. So just trying to rise up and say we need to be the fullest engaged. Thanks, sir.
Can I clarify? There are three issues. Problem is, today he is not presenting in the same way that he did when he was talking to me. He is focusing more on the lack of access to the provincial structure. To me, that is minimal. It's not an issue. There are three issues that they raised. One, the Department of Transport is organizing us, the National Department of Transport is organizing all of us as small bus operators throughout the country to form one body. There is an interim structure already. There is an interim chairperson, national chairperson. Okay? And the conference that they are referring to is a conference where they now have to elect a permanent structure. And that process requires that they in the province must have gone to their provincial conference so that they would then be able to send delegates. That is what has not happened at provincial level. And in my view, that process depends on the communication between the national department and the provincial department to facilitate that. They are frustrated because other provinces have gone to their conferences. They are not going to conference. That is one issue of the institutional arrangement then being organized so that they can speak in one voice in terms of their needs. The second issue is the issue that requires our intervention at national level today. Yes, we will be formalized as a structure, but there are issues that relate to you as a national portfolio committee discussed the issue of the treasury capitalization, and it became an intervention to the test industry. Also, it is a national intervention. The issue of subsidy is a national intervention. There is no provincial government that would come up with a national subsidy to small bus operators. That is what they are saying to say. Engage the Department of Transport at national level, and you as a portfolio committee begin to discuss the issue of us being left out. You are assisting the test industry, the government is assisting the test industry, and the government is assisting the big bus operators, and we are left out. The third issue that they are raising is the issue of this road infrastructure, which is not only the responsibility of the province, because for as long as at national level there is no adequate funding and there is no uniform approach, there is no municipality that will be able to deal with the issue of roads, and there is no provincial structure that will be able to deal, because remember, it is the money comes from treasury to the national department, and then it gets distributed to the provinces. That is what they are raising. And in that, in terms of the infrastructure, they are talking about issues of licenses, they are talking about their market. Because of the conditions of the roads, then the vans that are designed to transport goods are actually transporting people. They are within their market. And they even raise the issue of these buses as contracts. I don't know what happened today because it's not presenting like he presented. These buses are getting contracts of transporting people from point A or defect or whatever. We as small bus operators, even on transporting the school children, we are not considered. That is what they said. There is scholar transport, but we are not part of those discussions as the small bus operators. That is what they were saying to me. So I don't understand why today maybe it's because the conference is coming up and they are frustrated that they have not had their provincial conference, and then they are focusing more on the issue of having no access. But the issue that they are raising are issues that need us to intervene and then engage the department and the minister for the minister to talk about those issues in the MINMEC meeting. Because without a portfolio committee, in terms of our constitution, does not necessarily have to interact with the national structure. Any person can come to us and raise an issue that will then open our eyes and make us then take the necessary steps to address those issues. That is what they are doing. Honorable Sook.
Chairperson, now that you have recouped what the discussions were and trying to bring them in line, I think there are two processes for me which are very clear, because you are also giving us indirectly a way forward that we'll take the presentation, both his and the notes that you have made, points that you have raised, so that we interact with the Department of Transport, especially on the issue of the applied when they find themselves in a cash to two situation. To raise the bar with the Department of Transport, maybe, and also to the second point would be the coordination, which around the MOU, of which the national departments must interact with all provinces, not this one only, but all of them, just to check how far they moved, so that the environment is conducive for them to interact with all the departments of transport in various provinces. The third aspect would be, well, as we would interact with the national department around the subsidy, and check to what extent they progress in trying to solicit funding for the small bus operators. But that would be based on a policy first, to check whether there is a policy in place to do that, so that we activate that debate, so that we don't just respond for this province per se, but for the national, for this national approach, I mean, situation that our small bus operators are nowhere near to be assisted. So we have to take the forward. I must also appreciate our members, some of our members of the portfolio committee already started to make an initiative to assist these members in doing that. But surely there should be a kind of a formalization so that everybody was. I don't imagine that a government department will not allow a stakeholder to interact with them in all levels. So we'll have to make also a little bit of follow-up and to assist those members. And thanks also for those individuals who have made, all of the members who have made some input already. So to assist and lower the pressure from yourselves to get recognized. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. We thank you for coming to make a presentation. You have raised this issue, and we will interact with the department and also with the MEC here in terms of making sure that the process that is done by the department is actually not overstepping. I wouldn't want to have a situation where you keep on referring to the national department when you are actually here. I would like to see a situation where whatever is happening is done through the province, because you are in the province, and that is according to the intergovernmental relations framework. And on our side, you have raised the issue that require the attention of a portfolio committee in terms of how the small bus operators get organized, so that we are also able to follow up on the department in terms of the progress that is being made, and also in terms of ensuring that you are also taken care of like all other structures in transport that are being assisted. And after engaging with the DG and the minister, will then revert back to you today. We have engaged with them. We have discussed this matter also at the portfolio committee level. I, however, would want to make you understand that this period now, from now until beginning of December, we focus more on the budget review and also on the bills we may not come back to you early enough. Maybe we may come back to you to just in a letter form to say we have spoken to the minister, we have spoken to the DG, and this is the response in a letter form, and then maybe further engage next year. By that time, the national conference that has formalized your structures would have happened. And also here, we do have, like the Honorable Olive did SMS to Honorable Kala, and he responded. I'm sure he will also be of assistance to actually facilitate the situation that you are assisted to go to conference before the national conference takes place. But I must indicate that you are welcome here. We would do all in our power to find solutions to the challenges, to facilitate the situation where solutions are found to the challenges that the small bus operators are faced with. And we appreciate also the fact that you are providing people with transport, which is actually taking a burden from the government, because it should be the responsibility of the government to transport people. But then, in a country that has so many challenges, you then find the private sector also stepping in to provide those services, and there has to be a way of ensuring that that service is actually done in a manner that you also feel recognized and also feel that you are rewarded accordingly for the effort. We don't know. We don't have the answers right now, but we can hear you. We can see that there are challenges. Raise the hand up.
This one problem which we stick with, we are very fully with your explanation. But here what we got, as we plan, yes, the second is busy already issuing the tenders out. They are talking to the stakeholders, and we are out of the loop. And once we are out of that loop, we will be out of that loop for 12 years. Because there's Metro St. Carolina and all that area, which, as you see in the paper yesterday, billions of rand was being put aside for that area, and most of our people is in that area. And that is our biggest fear. As we plan, the cake is in sight, and it's there. And when we step into the table, there's nothing on the table, we got to wait for 12 years. And that is on what our consultancy basis holds. And we're trying to see, that's why we say we are totally on the first level. There was letters and letters being right to the MSP, to the Premier, since 2007, not one meeting back with us. And that's our biggest fear.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, we hear you. We will find a way of engaging through the, we'll talk to the minister. I will actually write to the minister and raise this issue, and then the minister would be in a position of raising it with his colleagues, because we need to address such issues to ensure that there is no one who is discriminated against. Is there anything that prevents the small bus operators from tendering if the contracts are up? The tenders are out calling for contracts.
Yeah, as you know, the small bus operator, as you know our name, small bus operator, certain times people think small is weak, but small is not weak. Maybe we got a wrong name, small bus operators. We are, if we can operate and transport over 100,000 school children every day, and if once in a while you hear about an accident, they take small bus operators out. If there is an accident
they bring the smaller perspirators on top. That is what they look like, and that's why we can't put them in the mainstream of the business. And that is my biggest, big concern. If the tenders is coming out, I will really put it to you on that level, why we were so long out of the mainstream of the business, since apartheid era, 40 years, 50 years back. They were in Sea Point, Green Point. We can't stay there. We can't operate there. We never get permits there. Permits was all in gate. If there's big companies which ask for permits, then they say, don't you know that area belongs to that big company? So we was marginalized by permits as well. And if they ask us now, where's your permits? Where's your operating licenses? We did struggle and we want to operate. We want, but there was no permits allowed. And if you look back, that's why we come to government. We come to government for the empowering part of us. Disadvantaged part. That was the disadvantage. And you can't pick us now that we got to walk on a, we can't walk, we grow. A small child, that's why we are small, that's where the word comes from. We are small, we are busy standing, we can't even walk yet. Thank you.
That is the issue our president, that today, you are not talking on the issue that you raised when I had a meeting with you. You are focusing more on the relationship. But when you were meeting with me, you raised the issue of permits that are not being issued, which is what would allow you as bus operators to operate. And that also is a national issue that we need to talk about, because even the taxi industry raised the first issues of the permit, operating licenses. You can have a bus, but if you don't have a permit to operate, you don't have an operating license, then what? So that is why I was saying, you raised very important issues when I was meeting with you, which then necessitated me to invite you to come here, so that in this meeting, we would then, as a portfolio committee, not apportion a blame, but find a solution as to how we are going to facilitate a situation where permits are issued, operating licenses are issued, and you are subsidized, roads are upgraded, all those things that you are talking about. I think we have come to, we have heard you. We will be looking into these matters. Thank you very much for raising this question. Okay. Okay, two issues. Honorable Oli, the issue about the regulation.
Doesn't work, excuse me. The yes, Chairperson, I think you know I wrote to you and to the new minister about these regulations. Today, as I said earlier, we got, well, I got anyway, I don't know if everyone got in my personal a copy of the one set. There were three sets of regulation that were promulgated by the former minister in the Government Gazette. First for comment, and then so on. And the Act requires us to get a copy and to make our own comments as committee. So today I've got this one set. I think it's, I'm not sure because we had a committee now, so I didn't have a chance to read it, but it's one set, I think, of the three bits. And then it's dated 31st of May, the cover sheet, and so on. But it never reached us till now. And the date for comments is long past. The Government Gazette said we had 4 weeks to comment, and so we've now missed it. And we've only got this today. I'm not sure whether Parliament received it and did not pass it on to us or what happened, but something's gone wrong, and we have now, as a committee, missed our opportunity to give our comments to this process, and I think for two more sets. I don't know if the two more sets are going to come tomorrow in Pigeonhole or where the other sets are, but something has broken down in the process, and I just raised it today because I got it today in my Pigeonhole, so I wanted to know what we do now. I'm not sure. Do we now write comments on this one? Are we going to get the other two? What happened about the gazetting process? Because the previous minister gazetted it and he's gone. He's no longer the minister. So now it questions the process of these regulations. So I thought I might raise it today because usually these things have time. You know, you get this, you must do something quick because then the time's finished.
Chairperson, in terms of regulations, the only regulations that have been referred to this committee this year was tabled on, because I check the MTC every day, was tabled on the 26th of September. So obviously when it happens, we immediately send the notices out. It's the one I will read to you because I've asked for that earlier. Proposed amendments to the National Road Traffic Regulations 2000, is that what it's saying? Tabled in terms of Section 75, 6A of the National Road Traffic Act. The 26th of September, Wednesday. Normally I send a copy of the ATCs, where I didn't send it now because we got a lot of documents tabled. It was tabled at the same time as the annual reports, yeah. But that was the only set of regulations this year that we got.
It could be that it was sent during that time, but I'm just thinking aloud now it could be also when the Secretary of Parliament was in problems and things could not have processed at that time, so there was a delay. We would know the circumstances that led all that. So we've got no more the Secretary of Parliament where we can hold him accountable for this. Maybe during that period, there was this delay of communicating with fully in the normal sense when he communicates with the committee. I'm just thinking aloud, I might be wrong. I'm just telling my view on this matter. Remember, we don't have any more the success.
We'll make a follow-up on that and come back on this issue to find out what has happened.
Yeah, just the two that are missing.
Yeah.
I can. For raising that. Yep.
Yes, sir. Well, my colleague Shankar thinks he's Zulu, so I don't know how I'm going to match that. As I indicated at the beginning of the meeting, and thanks again for allowing me to have the opportunity, since I was appointed as my colleague's deputy on this portfolio committee, as it happens, and I'm sure it happens to everybody else in this committee, various stakeholders start interacting with you. And I've had a number of emails and telephone calls from people who would rightly be regarded as either fairly high-level stakeholders or experts in aviation and aviation law surrounding some of the issues of air traffic in Gauteng, particularly around Mansiri and Rand Airport. And the gist of it is, and depending on who you talk to, some aspects are emphasized more than others, but there are people who believe that because of the proliferation of landing strips in smaller airports, sometimes even on bigger private estates which incorporates a landing strip, the fact of scheduled air flights having a different regime as unscheduled air flights, which can actually include Boeing, big commercial airlines, if it's not scheduled. All of these things apparently have been in place for some time. The problem has always existed, but it's gradually getting bigger and bigger. There's many, many aircraft that take off and land around these airports in Gauteng, and there appears to be a lack of regulation. That's the more concerned interpretation of the problem, which obviously then includes the possibility of near misses, perhaps something more serious. The less, let's say, newsworthy aspect of it is that simply, yes, it is a problem, but what we need to do is to recognize the problem and plan forward. In other words, let's try and put an understanding of the problem on the table. Let's try and work out, as people who are stakeholders and have interests and are people who care about the aviation industry and the need for us to be a leading nation in that regard, let's try and do some forward planning so we don't end up with a huge problem down the line. So my assessment, Chairperson, is that this need not be a party political matter. It is simply a question of giving a lot of people who have expressed varying degrees of concern a voice. They've asked for a meeting with the minister or the deputy minister, which I've communicated now on three occasions to the ministry, and I'm not really getting any response at all. And it's simply something which should be a roundtable discussion and might not even take longer than 2 or 3 hours. But I think the minister, particularly because it's a new appointment, would appreciate the opportunity as well to hear from people who are experts in the field for sometimes over 30 years, how they interpret this problem and how we could collectively simply take the necessary steps to make sure that everything goes well. We don't want to address the problem only after there's a tragedy. We should be proactive, and if people who have their hearts in the right place, if I can put it as naively as that, want to say, let's prevent the problem happening in the future, and we should be listening. So my plea to the committee is, can we please take this seriously, as we have the small bus operators yesterday, given them a hearing, in the same way, let's take the people who are the general managers of these airports, civil aviation law experts, let's take them as seriously, and let's set up something for them to express their views. They prefer to be in a forum with the minister or the deputy minister, but I simply think they'd like to believe that they're not ignored. So even if the minister can't see us or them in the next couple of weeks, the mere fact that they'll commit to a meeting and give a tentative date, even if it's sometime in the future, I think will at least lead the stakeholders to believe that we are taking their concerns seriously and as seriously as we've taken everybody up that's appeared before the committee. So that's my plea, and I'm asking for help because I'm getting no response of any definitive date from the military, and this is a committee that has got the inside track on that, and I'm asking we deal with this in a non-party political way. Certainly the stakeholders don't want to be a party political issue. Let's all work this out in the interest of the portfolio and the industry whose interests we are supposed to represent for the good of the nation. That's my plea.
Chairperson, we need to establish a principle that any stakeholder in the country who would like to meet the committee is entitled to do that. But maybe what we should also say is that a stakeholder or an individual, whatever, surely will have to consult you. Maybe have just a brief chat to assess the situation so that it can be formalized in the form of writing a letter to meet the committee. So that they can make a presentation to the committee, so that we are all offering, we are all equal in terms of the information. I'm just establishing a principle matter so that it is not difficult, because really we are impartial. It's a committee, we are an extension of parliament, of which the policies, our doors are open for every stakeholder. So I think like this one is very critical. You know, once you talk of airspace and landing and moving on, it's a tough matter that needs some kind of integrity for intervention. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I mean, I agree with everything that was said. It's just, I think my colleague is being a little bit polite. The potential is lots of little planes are taking off all over Gauteng. And we've got the big airports, which are very well controlled, very well organized. There's air traffic control that's very sophisticated, high level. But then you've got other little airports, smaller ones. And anybody that takes off, I mean, it's Grand Central. Not Rand Airport, Grand Central. It's owned by Old Mutual. Just now you're going to have planes there, and it floods into the airspace of Owatamba, which we established through talking to you. So it's dangerous. You know, you've got big Boeings coming from Europe, and others, little planes suddenly fly out from nowhere. That's the worry. The worry is lots of little planes taking off all over, and they're not all conforming, and sooner or later someone's going to see this little plane come from nowhere and there's a crash. The big airports seem to have their act together, but there's far too many unscheduled things going on.
Thank you very much. I think this is a very serious matter, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank the Honorable Krombo. And I think that Honorable Sook is correct to say, let us call them in here, the people that have read, and give them so that we elevate this issue. In that meeting, maybe we invite both the minister and the deputy minister and the department. In the same way, we have given a number of people who have raised issues, like AA came here to present to us the issue of fatal accidents in the country and what the situation, because that is what we expect citizens of this country to alert us to, and then find a way of channeling that influence, because the minister may be, ministers don't control their diaries. A chief of staff or whoever will get the letter and then keep on changing the date until such time that an accident happens. Whereas if it came through the portfolio committee, we raise it here, the minister cannot say no to the portfolio committee and we invite those. Thank you very much for the initiative, but we know also if it's a letter that goes there and they don't know, they we are not, as a portfolio, the entire portfolio committee involved. Sometimes it gets shifted to say, oh, we'll find some time, we'll find some time, let's prioritize this, whereas it is an issue that requires immediate attention. So anyone who gets information on anything that requires our attention, let us bring it to the notice of the chair of the portfolio committee, and then we put it on the pipeline. We find a space like we have done with this. If I had head of that, I would have prioritized that, because I'm very scared of death. know that priority is before, even before this one. Because it is very, 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 very important. Anything can happen at any time if that issue is not attended to.
Thanks for that. And I think the individuals and the organizations that they represent will actually appreciate the attitude that's been shown by the committee today. So I'd like to thank everybody that expressed that. So it's just that I've got it right. We are going to give them a hearing. We'll do it here, and I think they'll be fine with that, because as you said yourself, if they are able to convince the committee that this is something that needs to be looked into urgently, then the access to the ministry will be that much easier. I'm sure they'll be satisfied with it and understand that it's the interim step they have to take. Do you want me now to write to the individual concerned and ask them to put forward some kind of motivation for circulation? How does it work?
We have discussed this matter here. It is minuted. All that needs to happen now is to have the information to the committee, etc., so that she can then, I will sit with her and the with, to find a date on which we can slot them in, and then we. She can write a letter and invite them. If it requires us to ask for a special meeting, if we can't find space during this period, I would want us to look into this matter before we close. Yeah. It also relates to the security of the country, not just an accident. September 11 was the plane. So if there is that happening in the airspace, it requires immediate attention. Thank you very much for raising that issue. Sorry for delaying, but I think, we concluded before one, so we will have time for that. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Sorry. A reminder. We have an annual report briefing in the old assembly chain tomorrow. That's a reminder. Ammunition.